Sedano with you on 710 ESPN. Mama Momo hanging out today, as she does every Wednesday, all presented by Progressive Insurance. And all our guests, like Brian Windhorst, who will join us in 6 minutes, will appear via the Shell Pennzoil Performance Line. We will talk NBA with Brian. All right, Momo. So the first thing, it is official now. The Lakers have signed J.R. Smith. That, according to Woj. Chris Haynes of Yahoo is reporting, according to Rich Paul, JR's agent, that he will wear number 21. So what do you make of the JR addition? Do you believe he's a break glass in case of emergency player, or do you believe he's more than that?
Look, I think it's going to depend on how good a shape he's in. I think right now he doesn't go right into the rotation. He has to play his way in. But with the way this is all set up, like, I think there's going to come a time when they'll need him, whether it's one game for 10 minutes, whether it's he establishes himself with a spot in the lineup. But the guy, you know, the last version of J.R. Smith that we've all seen could still play some ball. And if he's anywhere close to what he was before, if he's been training and he's in shape, he's a good athlete, a good defender. He can have a heat check game.
Yeah, I mean, he could go give you 6 or 7 threes in one game fairly easily. You know what I'm saying? And you have to defend him. I don't think there's any question. But look, there's a lot of question marks about the bubble right now, Momo. We've talked a lot about it. Bradley Beal apparently has said on a conference call, our own Young Masuk has this, that he has not decided yet on whether to play in Orlando. He says, quote, he hasn't been swayed one way or another. He told reporters as well that there's a lot of stuff we can't do. Speaking of which, our own Stephen A. Smith outlined what he thinks is the most important thing to players and the thing they are not going to be able to do that they're used to doing. Hit it, Laura.
Here's the reason you got to be worried. I wanted to hold off on saying this, y'all, but I can't hold it no more. Do we really think that our the recreational activities, what these guys are accustomed to, are going to be compromised for 3 months? I mean, somebody's got to say it. Somebody's got to say it. You really, really think that people are going to be without their wives or their woman? Okay? I mean, the guys that are married without their wives, the guys that ain't married without their woman, you really, really think they honoring a bubble for 3 months and are going to deprive? Somebody got to tell the truth.
Stephen A., they've set up ping pong tournaments.
They're allowed to bring their significant other down there after a month.
Hey, listen, after a month, I just said forget 3 months. They going to struggle with 3 weeks. Why you think they won in Vegas? Can we stop? Can we stop? The issue right now is that you in Orlando for the first month, you got to be alone.
I mean, he's not wrong, Momo.
Look, I'll tell you what he's most right about. Nobody wanted to say that, right?
Right.
When I talked about it, we all use terms like the isolation, the social isolation.
Yeah.
Like, we were all talking around it because it's, you know, you don't want to talk about other people's business, right? Like,
right.
It's just kind of uncomfortable to talk about. So, you know, but it's also a realistic thing and it's a real issue. And I think he's right. I think that's a major thing when guys are like, wait, like, how long until we can bring a plus one?
Yeah.
54 days?
Yeah. Yeah.
54 days. It's not after a month, it's 54 days.
That's a long time.
It's a long time.
Kendrick Perkins and I talked about it on the air, and he basically said, we talked about how people may have to get creative with technology.
Look, I think that's been an issue all throughout quarantine, though, right?
Yeah.
Like, there's been a couple of funny articles that I've read about just like dating in the age of COVID. How do you date somebody right
Momo,
now?
Momo, we did like a whole show where people were calling in telling us how they were doing it. Laura, what was the one guy? What did that one guy say? That he asked the girl what?
You've been 14 days. I've been 14 days. We're good.
Yeah. Like I'm not even joking, Momo. It turned into a whole show of how people were conducting themselves when it came to their sexual relations.
I wonder about it. You know, like, you and I are married. We don't have this issue.
Right.
But like, if you're a single person, if you're like 22 years old, out on the prowl, don't have a boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever it is. Like, what have you been doing for 3.5 months?
You've been finding ways, that's for sure.
Well, I'll tell you this. What's the line from Jurassic Park? Life finds a way.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. All right, we move on. Victor Oladipo is still mulling over his options. Momo, if there's anyone that I don't think should play in this, is Victor Oladipo. He only played 13 games off that horrific leg injury. I just think it's better for him to sit out. He could be a max player 1 year or so from now. I think it's in his best interest to sit out.
I agree with you. And this is, you know, his injury was like he tore his quad muscle, right?
Yeah.
Like that's just like a really intense injury that now you've had a big long layoff, which you already came back from the long lift. So you'd want to ramp up anyway. And like there's not a big reward for him to come back unless he just wants to be with the team and train or whatever it is. But yeah, I think anybody with that type of an injury should chill, because this is really unprecedented to like have come back after a 4 month layoff like this.
Right. Now let me ask you this. Zion Williamson is now one of the players that will be on NBA 2K 21. Damian Lillard will be the traditional cover. He is on a different cover. There is, you know, there's alternative covers to this. And he is on the cover. He's the cover athlete for the next generation version, Zion Williamson. Was there anyone else that was more deserving than Zion Williamson for NBA 2K21?
I mean, like, yeah. What? Zion's a rookie who hasn't done anything yet.
Right. But the next generation one is about young players. So it's a different
John
cover
Morant.
For you. Right. You think John Morant should have been the guy?
Yeah, but they're probably trying to sell a lot of covers. So, okay, Zion.
Right? No, I get it.
That's he's the most marketable. He's
even Luka, right? Even Luka could have been on that next generation cover for sure.
Although he doesn't dunk or do any highlight. You know, he's more of a tricky player.
Yeah, he is a fancy passer, though.
Yeah.
All right, that's what you need to know. Brian Windhorst is going to join us here in a second, giving us the Straight Talk, brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless. But what you need to know is presented by Progressive Insurance. At Progressive, they're making things even easier, helping you bundle your home and car insurance together so you can save on both. Learn more at progressive.com or call them at 1-800-PROGRESSIVE. Brian Windhorst, ESPN NBA insider, friend of the program, now joins us here. Brian, we were just talking about the bubble. I do want to talk about your story and your podcast. And thank you for the shout out, by the way, on both when it came to your story about the decision and the anniversary of that. But let's talk bubble here real quick. We were just talking about Victor Oladipo. There are just certain guys, whether it's him, Davis Bertans, like, I know Bertans is out. There are certain guys that shouldn't return to this after 13 games and that horrific of an injury. I don't see a reason for Victor Oladipo to come back, especially with everything that's on the line from him in a year or so.
I don't understand. I mean, it's not my leg, so I can't say how his leg feels. He's 20 months off the injury. He's being paid a lot of money. The Pacers need him right now. If he's hurt and that's the situation, then okay. If he's not hurt, I don't know. I don't quite get it. But again, the Pacers can't pressure him because the Pacers are trying to sign him to an extension this offseason. Same with the Wizards and Bertans. They want to re-sign him. So they're going to support him. I'm surprised Oladipo is hesitant. If it's very possible that I don't have all the information, that there's something I don't know and that he's for some reason not saying. But I'm surprised he's worried about the injury. Again, he's 20 months off the injury or something like that. He was playing very well when he went down. And I understand he hasn't played in 4 months. Nobody has played in 4 months. So that's a curious situation, to be honest with you, from my perspective.
Hey, Bri, I want to talk about your story that you did the other day, which I was like reading, you know, with rapt attention. I know you've covered a lot of this stuff, too, in one of your latest books called LeBron Inc. You know, I thought the detail there about, you know, LeBron had said on the decision to Jim Gray that there was only four or five people who knew his decision. And yet Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade had parties going in South Beach that night. And there was like LeBron's plane had already filed flight plans to fly to Miami. And he and his friends had rooms booked at the W. How did that not get out? Like, how did nobody, is that just like 2010 versus 2020 reporting?
Yeah, because social media just wasn't where it is now. I mean, you know, the reason that the pilots had to know from the way it was explained to me is, you know, the pilots knew the teams he had met with you know, they knew he'd met with the Clippers, even though it was highly unlikely. You know, if he was picking the Knicks, he wasn't going to need a plane, right?
Mm-hmm.
They needed to know how much fuel to put on the plane. Enough fuel for Miami, enough fuel for Los Angeles. So it had to be communicated with them. I mean, you know, I know that having a private jet gives you a certain amount of doing what you want, but you kind of got to let the people know where you're flying. So that's how that went. And I'm sure the rooms were not booked under his name. But my point is they had made the plans. And so, you know, that day, looking back on it, I mean, there were stories out throughout the day from respected media outlets that he was going to Miami. The best I could do at the plane dealer at the time was that he had told people he was going to Miami. I couldn't nail down for sure. But as you can imagine, everything at that time, every little bobble in the LeBron story was being covered
on
the media and on social media. Yet, when it happened, all of Cleveland acted like they were stunned.
Right.
So I don't think it would have been the same case today. I don't think it, you know, certain secrets do get held. But like when LeBron announced he was going to the Lakers, I think it was pretty clear he was going to the Lakers. The surprise was the timing of the announcement and the nature of it. But I think the reporting was pretty complete on that. So it's just a time and place thing. I think you're right.
Brian Windhorst joining us here. Was there anything as you wrote that comprehensive story and you did all the reporting for it that even surprised you as immersed in that story in 2010 as you were?
Yeah, so I think one thing that is just was remarkable was that the Bulls held back their full pitch to Dwayne Wade. He was the first one up July 1st at like around noon. He came out to the United Center. He was in Chicago. And they didn't give him their full pitch because they thought he's not leaving Miami and he's only coming here on a fishing expedition to find out what our strategy is to take it back to the Heat. They didn't trust him. They didn't trust that he really wanted to play in Chicago. So they gave him, the way it was said to me, like a much scaled down version of their pitch. Then they pitch Chris Bosh. Bosh likes what he hears. Some people in Chicago feel like he had all but committed to them. And then Wade asks for a second meeting. And the second meeting with Chicago, the Bulls are like, wait a minute, we may actually have something here. And they give him the full pitch, everything that they had been preparing. And in the meeting, Wade says, hey, could you possibly make room for another star? We know you have two slots. Mm-hmm. Could you do something to make room? And he had done the inverse. Chicago was afraid he was going to go back to Miami. What he had done was brought Miami's plan to Chicago. And I just don't think that the Bulls were prepared for that kind of maneuver. If they had been prepared like Miami spent months preparing for this and weeks leading up to this maneuvering. They actually got it down, as you guys may remember. They only had one player under contract, Mario Chalmers, and he was making less than $2 million. They had one player under contract. Well, the Bulls had all these young guys, Derrick Rose, Joakim Noah, Taj Gibson, you know, Luol Deng, who had already signed a big contract, but they hadn't prepared to strip their roster down. If they knew that this was going to happen and they could have spent all of May and June stripping their roster down basically to just Derrick Rose and Joakim Noah, maybe that this could happen. But because they didn't find this out till July 2nd, they were sort of caught on their heels. And that's the thing. If the Bulls had maybe different foresight or more aggression, but it's hard to throw a flag on them all these years later because they had Derrick Rose, who was the MVP of the league the next year, and they really liked their young team, which won 60 games the next year. This was not like the Heat, who were dismantling a 6 or 7 seed, or the Nets or Knicks, who were non-playoff teams. So it's easy now to look back 10 years later and say, well, why didn't you rip your team to shreds? And that's the thing. I really do think Wade was interested, even if it was for just a 12-hour period, in coming to Chicago, and the Bulls couldn't pull it together like the Heat did, and that's why the Heat won the race.
Well, what's interesting is, you know, Derek, when you're in your story, you talk about how Derrick Rose really wasn't part of the pitch, and some of it was he was young, it really wasn't his personality. Do you think that could have changed history? Like if Derek either had a different personality and was like Spencer Dinwiddie type, Okay, Spencer's was huge in recruiting KD and Kyrie to the Nets this year. Or do you think he would have been seen as more of a threat to LeBron and Dwayne and Chris?
Yeah, it's hard to know. I mean, it's hard to know without getting in LeBron's head.
Yeah.
How much that was an issue. Because when you think about that lineup, it would have been Derrick Rose at point guard, Dwayne Wade at two, LeBron at three. They would have had to trade Luol Deng to do that. So LeBron would have been their three, Bosh would have been their four, Noah would have been their five.
Wow.
When you think about that lineup, I mean, the Bulls lineup without those three guys won 60 games the following season. The Heat won 58 or whatever and went to the finals. When you think about that, you think, oh, my God, that's a historically great lineup. That's, you know, there's two MVPs in that lineup and a couple other Hall of Famers. You do have to consider how they would have all fit together. I mean, LeBron and Wade, it took them a while to figure it out. Yes, in a vacuum, if Derek had come to, you know, the Bulls wanted Derek to come to Cleveland to pitch LeBron personally, and he declined. He recorded a video instead. But it wasn't like there were guys from the other teams. Of course, the only guy from the Heat that could have come was Mario Chalmers. So, you know, what they had was Dwayne Wade. So it's not apples to apples. If he had done what, like, Steph Curry and Klay Thompson had done, where they went to the Hamptons and sat there and said, don't worry about the shoes, don't worry about this, we're going to work it out. But that's a lot to ask of somebody like Derek, who's 21 at the time. And he wasn't wired like – he wasn't wired as an empire builder.
Yeah.
You know? And that's not who – even to this day, that's not who he is. So – but I think if I was a Bulls fan, when you read the story and you think about what happened, it's enough to make your stomach turn. And if Derek doesn't hurt his knee, maybe it doesn't matter. Maybe the Bulls build a team strong enough to win it anyway, and that was just a consequence of history.
Make sure you check out the story about the meetings that took place during the 2010 offseason, an unprecedented offseason in the NBA. Brian Windhorst did a fantastic job with that story. It's on his Twitter, it's on ESPN.com, and on the ESPN app. And of course, he is the host of the Hoop Collective podcast, and they discussed that recently on the most recent episode as well, so make sure you subscribe and download to that. Look, I know Ramona alluded to LeBron's picking the Lakers, and it's the two-year anniversary of that. Brian, you know, I guess my question to you would be this. If you asked LeBron now about committing to the Lakers with the team they had in place, what do you think his reaction would be now with hindsight and you know, having the ability to look back on it?
Well, I think LeBron could have looked at what happened with Kawhi Leonard and wondered if there was something else that could have been done. You know, I still to this day, I remain surprised by everything that Paul George did. Number one, not coming to play for the Lakers. I guess he didn't want to play with LeBron. I guess he preferred Russ. And I don't understand why he signed a shorter contract. I don't understand why he didn't. Why he signed for 4 years. I've listened to the explanation of why he did, and I still don't understand it. But I also think that, you know, LeBron believes that what you need to win is him. I think LeBron's like, you know, I will go somewhere and then I'll put the team together. You know, he has said many times, my teams have a chance because I'm on them. So, you know, part of it is LeBron's at a different place in his career where he's like, you know, I'm going to go to LA and whether I get a player this year or I get a player next year, I'm going to get a player because I'm LeBron and we're the Lakers. And guess what? He wasn't wrong. He wasn't wrong in that. He has Anthony Davis. But when you watched and saw how Kyrie completely leveraged his situation, Kawhi completely leveraged his situation, you have to be impressed with that. I mean, that took it to another level. You know, just as Dwayne basically came to the Bulls and said, I'm going to push you to the absolute wall to figure this out, and the Bulls weren't able to and the Heat were, Kawhi came and said to the Clippers, I'm going to push you to the absolute wall to figure this out. LeBron did not do that with the Lakers. I don't think he regrets how it is because he's got a championship contending team in year two, and they believed they were going to have a great team in year one. It ended up being a flawed belief, but I think LeBron genuinely did believe that they had put together a good team. But I was surprised that he didn't maybe use more of the leverage. He certainly used some leverage when he came back to Cleveland. he got them to trade Andrew Wiggins for Kevin Love, although it's a trade that made sense and led to a championship. But I guess I'm a little bit surprised about that, especially when the Lakers' plans the rest of that summer were so strange. But they were ratified by LeBron. So, like, you know, I think he takes ownership of that for sure.
Well, what's interesting, I mean, he didn't use his leverage in year one, but he did in year two. So, like, they did get Anthony Davis after that one, right? But
well, I mean, he tried to use his leverage in February of year one, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, Brian, you have a story that just posted about a half hour ago about the NBA and how much it's going to cost them to be down at Walt Disney World. It's going to cost how much is it now? Like, and for everything that they're going to do just to be in the bubble for all these 22 teams.
Yeah, it's going to cost the cost of the bubble itself is more than $150 million. I don't think it's $151 million. I think it's actually quite a bit more than that, but that's what I'm comfortable saying is more than $150 million. And Adam Silver gave an interview to Time Magazine, I think it was yesterday or the day before, where he talked about how enormously expensive this is. And I think the reason it's important to point that out is I'm not sure everybody quite understands just what the NBA is doing here. Yes, they are making money in quotes because if they canceled the season, they would have potentially lost, you know, up to $2 billion. But this is costing them so much money. You know, they have to rent out Disney World. Now, did they pay the same freight as you or I would, even with our employee discount? No. Mm-hmm. They obviously made a deal. They made a deal with Disney World. But it's still, you know, you can't ask Disney to give you three hotels and three arenas and seven practice courts and 3 months of meals for 1,500 people for free. I mean, you know, it costs tens of millions to do that. And mm-hmm. And that's why I think, you know, earlier this week, you know, some of the teams who are not in the bubble, those eight teams, they've been saying, hey, we want to play. And it's like, we know you want to play. We're sorry you can't. But frankly, we can't afford it. We can't afford to put on another bubble. And Michelle Roberts, the head of the union, came out and said, look, we're not going to play with those eight teams unless the bubble is the same as it is in Orlando in terms of safety. And the Leafs, like, we're spending $150 million in terms of that. And even that $150 million doesn't account the loss of ticket sales. You know, just at Staples Center alone, when you think of how many playoff games are going to be played at Staples between the Lakers and Clippers, I was ballparking somewhere between 20 and 25. Let's just assume that they both went to the conference finals and then went to the finals. Mm-hmm. You know, each one of those playoff games was going to be 10 plus million.
Wow.
You're looking at 200 to 300 million in lost revenue just on Staples Center.
Wow.
Ticket revenue. Now multiply that out by all the playoff games. The NBA is going to lose between $1 billion and $1.2 billion on what their season was going to be. And then this is going to cost another $150 million plus. You know, this is they are swimming in red right now, the NBA is. But they are doing it because they know it's important to the fans, it's important to the players, and it sets the groundwork for the future. So they're going to take that loss. But it's very important to understand that this is a loss, that the NBA is doing this as an investment. They are not profiting off of that. And that's something that I think everybody is going to have to realize, because some of this bubble is going to be uncomfortable. But this is for the good of the game and the good of the fans.
How much are they making back, Bri? Like, so the loss, you know, you have to spend money to make some, like, they're also making back money from their broadcast deal, right?
Right. So first off, let's talk about the players. Mm-hmm. The players, if the season had been canceled, the players would have lost an extra $650 million in salary. Mm-hmm. So the players, by playing those 88 games, and by the way, even the players on the eight teams who don't come, they get their salaries for those eight games, even though mm-hmm. they're not there. That's $650 million. So the players save that amount. The league could have still gotten, from the way it's been explained to me, the league could have still gotten its TV money this year, but then they would have owed the money back to ESPN and Turner and their local revenue next year. Mm-hmm. So by playing these games, they're basically able to keep their TV money, which I don't know what the calculation is. It's in the hundreds of millions. So between the players' retained salary and the retained salary and the TV money, it's probably between $1 and $2 billion that they're, quote-unquote, saving In other words, it's not going to go out the door. They're holding it in. And the thing that the NBA had going for it is that they still were able to get in three quarters of the season. That means that they got in three quarters of the home games and stuff like that. When you look at like where baseball is, they're looking at playing an entire season without a dollar in ticket revenue. And then NBA next year, depending on how many fans can come in the building, that's when we may get drastic. At the end of the day, the players are going to walk away with somewhere around 80% of their salaries from this year.
Mm-hmm.
Considering everything, that's a huge win. The NBA as a whole is going to lose somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 to 18% of its projected revenue. So weathering that storm this year hasn't been too bad. But next year, with no fans or greatly reduced fans, the losses could be way extended.
Brian Windhorst, ESPN NBA insider with us here, friend of the program. He's the host of the Hoop Collective podcast. Make sure you download and subscribe to that. Brian, J.R. Smith, it's official now within the last hour or so that he is going to be a member of the Lakers. What does he bring to the table at this stage, a year removed or so from playing basketball?
No clue whatsoever. You know, J.R., speaking frankly, he was not good his last full year in the NBA. And then he played a month with the Cavs after LeBron left and they sent him home. So he has not played consistent good basketball since the 2016-17 season.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a little bit in 2017-18. He just wasn't the player that he was. Now, I'll say this. At the end of the day, we're talking about the 15th man, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not expecting him to be in the rotation. But the complicated issue with this is I look at everything the Lakers do through the lens of what does it mean when playing the Clippers? What does it mean when playing the Clippers?
Mm-hmm.
And to me, when you're going to count on having Paul George and Kawhi Leonard out there, you're going to have to defend between 80 and 84 minutes of those two guys combined. And it's not just one player, you know, for each man. You're going to have a cadre of wings who can be out there on the court who can defend them. And so you've got LeBron. You've got, you know, Caldwell Pope. You've got Danny Green, obviously. Alex Caruso, you know, potentially could play a little bit on Paul George. He's got good length. You've got Rondo. By getting J.R. Smith, you have another guy who at least, because you lost Bradley, you're down one of those players. You have another guy out there who can, in theory, with his size, be competitive in those situations. And I think that's why they went for him. Because, you know, there's not that many guys out there who can shoot like J.R. can, who are also 6'7". So, to me, it's all about what happens to the Clippers. Because I feel good about the Lakers' chances against every other team in the West, even with, you know, having lost Bradley. I feel pretty good. I don't feel so good about the Clippers, and losing Bradley hurts in that regard. So, listen, I know J.R. personally. While J.R. doesn't always have the best judgment, I do think he's a good man. And when he plays well, he's always helped his team that he's been on. What you want to avoid is ever having to rely on him. Mm. Go back and look at his career. The teams that he was on that relied on him often got let down. The teams where they could use him as an option when they needed him, he was often very helpful. So that's what you're hoping for there.
Brian, one last one here because we got to run and you've been so kind with your time. We don't know if Dwight Howard will commit. We know Avery Bradley is out, as you alluded to. What's a bigger potential loss for this Lakers team in your estimation, Howard or Bradley?
Well, again, I look at it all through the Clippers lens. I mean, the way that the Lakers play defense and how valuable Dwight's been, I guess in a vacuum, you'd say Dwight. The Clippers, because of the Clippers, I say Avery. And, of course, the one time, I know it's hard to judge mm-hmm. games that are 5 months ago, but the one time the Lakers beat the Clippers was when Avery had a great game, hit 6 threes. So, again, in the Clippers' lens, I say it's got to be Avery. You really don't want to lose another player, though. Dwight's going to do what he's going to do, but you really don't want to lose another one at this point.
Brian Windhorst, ESPN NBA insider. Make sure you subscribe and download the Hoop Collective podcast. Check out the article or the column we were talking about. It's a great story about the free agency of 2010. Again, an unprecedented time in the NBA. B, thanks for the time, man. Appreciate it as always. Stay healthy. Stay safe.
Okay. All right. Take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Bri.
See ya. All right. Momo, we'll unpack some stuff there. Plus, you and I got to talk about issues with your ex. The NFL has some issues with their exes right now, and we'll tell you what that's all about in 4 minutes. Yeah, happy birthday, Missy Elliott, 49. It's all presented by Progressive Insurance. Our guests like Brian Windhorst, who joined us there, appear via the Shell Penzo Performance Line. Mama Momo's in the house. 30 minutes to go here in the show. By the way, it's not game day, but you can still feast like it. Meet Church's new $5 Campfire Smokehouse Chicken, a fan favorite with a new campfire flavor, plus mashed potatoes and a biscuit. Church's bringing that down-home flavor. Offer valid at participating locations. So, Momo, the Brian story about 2010, like, I know we spent like the first 6 or 7 minutes talking about that. It really is fascinating, like the way that entire offseason just kind of played out, and just the way LeBron handled it. Like, I said this the day, last week on Friday, we had Don Van Natta on because, you know, he did that backstory on the decision. And I, in retrospect, as I watched that show on Sunday, I mean, LeBron started player empowerment right there. You know, now granted, the execution may not have been what everyone had expected, but really that thing worked out for everybody, LeBron included, even though that first year was rough.
Well, I think it worked, you know, that started player empowerment in that he realized how valuable his free agent decision was. And there came this recognition among players. Like, I actually think, this is going to sound silly, but I actually think it started when high school football players started making a big production out of their announcements.
Signing day. Yeah.
And, you know, that's where the idea for LeBron signing the LeBron's thing came from. Like, people saw, you know, everybody started doing these little press conferences with the hats and stuff, you know, like, you know, which one am I going to wear?
Right.
Is it going to be, you know, UCLA, USC, or Notre Dame, right? Like, that's kind of where this started. And then Kobe obviously did the press conference when he decided to take my talents to the NBA.
Right.
And I, you know, I thought the thing in the Don Van Natta story that was funny was like, I mean, there was a few things that were funny, like that he had lunch with Kanye the day of the decision. What?
Right.
Like him, LeBron and Kanye, like that was one of his last guys that he consulted with, huh?
Yeah.
But the thing I thought was interesting was it didn't seem like he had scripted out what he was going to say. Like he just, Jim finally just asked him the question, where are you going to go? And I don't think he scripted, I'm going to take my talents to South Beach. I think that's just whatever came into his head. And the LeBron that I know in 2020 absolutely would have had that scripted. He would have absolutely had that messaging down better.
Oh, there's no doubt. Like, and look, it was too long, right? I know they had to stretch it for a while, but yeah, like I thought the crazy part that I didn't know when I watched that thing was Maverick Carter going to Jim Gray and going, asking for more questions. He's like, do you really want to do more?
Yeah. And then
it
the
was
question
just for social.
Was,
yeah.
It was on LeBronJames.com and it was a fan asking about how the weather in South Beach played.
Yeah.
It was what?
Yeah.
And Jim's like, really? You want me to ask him that?
Yeah.
And
it
was like, I think what was crazy about it was just like how they had an idea, but like clearly hadn't spent a whole lot of time thinking through how this was going to play out. Like there was probably no rehearsal. There was really not a lot of discussion beforehand about what was going to be done and said. Like it was just like Jim was just going to tease this out. And, you know, it rated well, like 10 million people watched it. But, you know, LeBron that I know, I know this idea that, you know, he's just so good at messaging now. So smart and calculated in everything he says. Mm-hmm. Very rarely does LeBron go off the cuff,
right?
You know, with something.
Yeah.
And when he does, it's still, there's been some thought put into what he's going to say and how he's going to say it, you know? So I think that is the biggest change in LeBron. Like they had to make a pretty big belly flop, pretty big mistake to learn from it. And he's really never let that happen ever again.
No, absolutely not. He did not. So Momo, obviously a lot of talk about the NFL this week as Cam Newton signed. And it felt like, oh my God, we've got actual news to talk about, at least for a day or two. But of all the stuff that's popped out there recently, and we've kind of been cammed out, like we've talked about it a little bit, and I'd love to get your thoughts on it in general because I want to ask you a specific Cam Brady type question. But before I get to that, there was this thing on Instagram where Julian Edelman, you know, posted a picture of Cam in the Patriots jersey with him, right, like on the field and, you know, shouting him out and calling it, you know, Newton, Massachusetts or whatever. And then Tom Brady kind of noticed like, huh, wait a second. My old boo is out there, you know, talking about the new, you know, the new partner. And Tom Brady wrote, I'll always be your number one. And I thought that was a little funny yet petty at the same time. But I thought Ryan Clark, ESPN NFL analyst, who's honestly, I think he's the best NFL analyst we have. He's the most entertaining. He's amazing. He's really sharp and smart. He nailed it when it came to the analogy between Brady and Edelman. Laura, let me hear the Ryan Clark sound from Get Up.
Right. Tom left because they would never treat him like a 10. They kept treating him like the ugly duckling he was when they drafted him. And when he grew into the swan, they didn't respect that he grew into the swan. Now, you know what happened, right? So he was like, forget that. You don't want to treat me like a 10? I'm around him. I'm model. I done got fine. I'm wearing all these Tom Fords. You know what? I'm going to leave and go somewhere else. Right. So then when your old man move on and he get a new girl, it's one thing if the new girl is hot, too. That's a good thing. Or if the new guy is good looking, too. What makes it worse is when he or she is totally different from you, because then you start to wonder, hold on.
Yes.
For 2 decades, I thought I was your type. But all of a sudden, you didn't win. He got his tan or her tan a little more darker. We got different hair. So were you just settling with me because you was comfortable? Or was this always what you wanted? Because soon as I skedaddle, I thought you was going to have like a younger version of me and Jared Stidham that wasn't that good. But you went, he taller than me, right? He got more muscles than me. He run faster than me. His style is different, but you might like that style more. That's why he said, I'm always your number one, because things are changing in New England.
I mean, he's not wrong. You know what I'm saying? That I mean, that kind of encapsulates it right there.
Yeah. I mean, I think the whole thing with Tom is that in New England is that they never treated him as important as he actually was. They never made him feel like we can't live without you. You're a part of the, you know, he never got even the star treatment. Like, you know, and when you're a star, like, you know who treats you like star. Like, I think everywhere else Tom went, he got treated like more of a star than he got treated in New England. You know, they wouldn't let him have his guys there. Like, you know, LeBron, if LeBron wants to have Randy Mims on his, you know, at his locker every night, if he wants to have his own security, his own camera crew following him, the Lakers are going to say, no problem, man.
Right.
Tom can't even get his own trainer in there.
Yeah. Well,
like, that's how you treat a star. And I think, like, he just finally got tired of that.
Well, there's definitely that. Like, I don't disagree with that. The Patriot way can be annoying after a while. But the other thing I thought was fascinating was just what Ryan alluded to, which stuck out to me, is when you break up with someone, and, you know, one thing is, you know, if they get someone that's like you, that's similar to you. But when they go a whole different direction, they go 180, I mean, that's kind of like, whoo, wait a second. You're telling me he runs faster than me? You're telling me he's got a stronger arm than me? He's bigger, stronger, got more muscles than me? You start to get a little, you start looking inward if you're Tom Brady and are like, maybe I am a little more insecure than I thought.
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing. Like, I think with Cam, like, what you definitely don't want your ex to end up with somebody better than you, right? Like, if Cam goes in there, and this whole year is now a referendum for both of them. It's Belichick trying to prove he was the main important guy in New England, the reason why they won, and Brady trying to prove he was more important. So whichever team does better, that's who wins. So if Tom goes down to Tampa Bay, they win a Super Bowl, and New England goes 6-10, and it's like, okay, Tom can say, see, it was me. It wasn't the system. But if Belichick brings in Cam Newton, plays a whole different system,
and they
go
win.
12-4, and they win.
Yeah, that's going to hurt. That's going to hurt
Tommy
Boy.
That's going to hurt.
So, Greg, I'll start with you. If you dated someone and they dated someone that was the 180, like the complete opposite of you, does that sting more than someone who basically is you but a better version for them than you were?
Of course.
Yeah.
I'm saying that I'm the exact opposite of what they actually wanted. So when someone dates someone that's kind of similar to me, but maybe on a lesser scale, I feel way better.
Laura, where are you?
Yeah.
Do you agree with Greg?
I want to agree, but then I also want to be like super confident and be like, I don't care what they're doing and I'm doing
this. Oh, yeah.
This.
Not true.
Get out of here.
Never
get
true.
Here.
No, be real. You got, no, look. Mm-hmm. I'm not about to put my business out there, but yes, you got to be like confident and be like, I got this. We didn't work out. So on to the next one. And that's what it is. Like, you don't got to worry about your ex.
Let okay, I'm gonna open it up to the phones right now. 877-710-ESPN. If your ex dates someone who is the complete polar opposite of you, does that sting more than someone who is kind of like you when they start dating someone else? All right, 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. Plus, Mobo, I'm going to ask you, who will go further, Cam and the Pats or Brady and the Bucks?
Ooh.
Plus, we've got some more NBA news to pop on your radar here in the last segment, all coming up in 2 minutes. Sedano, 710 ESPN. Sedano with you here on 710 ESPN. Mama Momo hanging out as she does every Wednesday. Tune into the ESPN Daily podcast with our friend Mina Kimes. And not too
soon?
Long, not yet, soon to be Pablo Torre, our friend, will be taking over the ESPN Daily. But tune into the ESPN Daily podcast nonetheless, bringing you a deep dive into a single story from one of ESPN's hundreds of reporters, including Momo, who's on there pretty regularly. Presented by Marathon. Download, subscribe, and review the ESPN Daily with our friend Mina Kimes and soon to be Pablo Torre, available wherever you enjoy your podcast. And of course, brought to us by our friends at Pennzoil Synthetic Motor Oils. They're made from natural gas, giving you an unbeatable engine protection. The proof is in the Pennzoil. So we had some breaking news earlier, Momo, that and before we get to the calls, people are lighting up the phones on this conversation we just had about Julian Edelman and Cam Newton and Tom Brady. But Lou Williams, Doc Rivers expects Lou Williams to be part of the Clippers contingent in Orlando. So that's certainly good news for the Clippers because – I mean, he's their third best scorer on the roster, right? Like, that's fair to say.
Lou, to me, is an X factor for the Clippers. Like, at the end of the games, you can't really stop that Lou Williams Montrezl Harrell pick and roll. Like, you know it's coming. You have strategies, but they still score. And he's just one of those guys that just finds a way to score. And I think that would be a huge loss for them if he doesn't play. But like I said, I don't think anything's written in stone. Like, you could play, and then you could go home, and then you could, like, do the whole protocol and quarantine again and come back for other parts of it. Like, you know, the fact that Doc says that he's expecting him to go to Orlando with him is a big deal. You know, if you get him in the door, if you get him started, you know, get back in that team environment, I think that's probably a good sign. Same thing for Dwight, if he shows up at the Lakers facility today.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll see. You know, we still are waiting on Dwight. There's no word yet on Dwight Howard, so... Hopefully, we'll know soon here whether he's going to be part of the Lakers contingent or not. Real quick, before we get to the calls, and we got some tweets rolling in on this conversation about the exes, because Ryan Clark had a great analogy basically saying that Tom Brady responded to Julian Edelman's Instagram post about welcoming Cam Newton with a picture of him and Cam like on the field and, you know, calling it Newton, Massachusetts. And Tom Brady responded, "I'll always be your number one." Little jealousy there, Tommy boy. Little jealousy. And it was, Ryan's assertion was that, well, you know, Cam is the complete opposite of Tom. He's bigger, he's stronger, he's taller. He runs faster than him. He's got a stronger arm. He looks completely different. One's white, one's black, right? Like, it's just like, ooh, you're going 180 on me here in your new relationship, and I don't like it. So we asked the audience to weigh in on if your ex goes 180 on you, how does that make you feel? 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. Before we get to that, I'll ask you the question. Call your shot, Momo. Who goes further this year, Cam and the Patriots or Tommy Boy and the Bucks?
I like Tommy and the Bucks.
Really? Even in a tougher division?
I know. I believe... I just kind of believe. I think they actually have some talent down there too, and they're going to do a good job of adding to that roster too. Because there's that Brady effect of people wanting to go play with Tom. And the Patriots, to me, like while they were a good team, they like have they added any receivers?
No, they still have Mohamed Sanu and Julian Edelman in that group, right?
It's just not Brady wasn't the same as the same Brady you've seen for years and years, but. They didn't have a lot of weapons on offense last year. And I think that slowly wore them down. So I haven't seen them really improve that much on that side of the ball. And now Cam Newton, who's on this, I think Cam's a really talented player, and that's a really good spot for him because, you know, if he's going to change around his career, this is a great way to do it. But he also hasn't stayed healthy for a while, which is why they structured his contract the way they did. So I'm not even sure Cam's going to be starting out of the gate. Like, if I'm the Patriots, I might ease him.
Oh,
into it.
Yeah, I think he's starting. Yeah,
you do?
I don't think they're messing around with Jared Stidham at this point. Like, yeah. I think they're bringing in Cam because he's going to play. And he's got those incentives, right? Like, I know he's on the minimum deal for $1 million, but he can make up to $7.5 million this year.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think he's going to play. And I think Bill is interested. Belichick, that is interested in the challenge, right? Of creating something new, because this was something we talked to. Who did we talk to? I don't remember who it was we spoke to, but anyway, I was talking about this yesterday or the day before yesterday about the Patriots, man, on the fly have done a lot of stuff. Like, I remember couple years ago, they were playing the Houston Texans. It was either Sunday night or Monday night football. And Brady was out. And then Jimmy Garoppolo got hurt. And they played with Jacoby Brissett. It was Kirk Morrison who told us this. And they game planned in 3 days. And Brissett ran the run, RPOs, run play, pass options, and all that stuff. And they beat the Texans in a primetime game with Jacoby Brissett. So I think Belichick's got a lot of this stuff up his sleeve. And let's not forget that Josh McDaniels also coached Tim Tebow, you know what I'm saying, to a playoff, they became a playoff team. So I think the Patriots, they can still win the division. And because, Momo, they can still win the division, they have a chance at a bye. And I don't know if the Bucs, because the NFC is so hard, will have a chance at a bye unless they win the division. And I don't think that's even a given with New Orleans in that division.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, I hear you. I don't know why I have this irrational faith in Tom.
And sure. Sort of like, I get it.
Relax,
I get it.
Tom.
I get
but
it.
Also, like, Tom on his last deal.
Yeah.
Like, super loose.
Yeah.
Just trying to enjoy. It's like he's been let out of a boarding school. You know?
Right.
Like,
yes. Yes.
You know,
yes,
oh,
yes,
man,
yes.
I don't have to wear that school uniform every day. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I mean, this is going to be like Tom gone wild. It's going to be fun.
It is going to be fun. All right. So here's the first tweet we got before we get to the calls. This one is from Paramel. He says, Sedano, I don't care either way about my exes. Ancient history is ancient history. My ex dates someone similar to me. Ooh. Get over my type. We're done. Someone 180? Good. We can move on. Hashtag bye Felicia. All right. Let's go to the phones. Let's go to Cameron. Is Cameron there? Cameron in Thousand Oaks?
Hey, how's it going?
Hey, bud.
Hey, so all I got to say is it's similar to that tweet there. You got to leave your exes in the past, but I'll tell you what. Tom Brady is feeling some type of way right now. He is reaching into his bag of feelings. And he's getting emotional down there in Florida.
It does feel that way. I mean, that was a weird response. Thank you for the call, Cameron. Right, Momo? Like, I guess you could play it off as it was funny, but I don't know. Like, I don't know if I buy that.
Yeah, there's a funny quality to it. Like, I'll always be your number one. Like, is he reminding Edelman of that? Or is he just saying, I still feel the same way about you, even though you're moving on from me?
I know,
like,
which
is
worse.
It's kind of not clear.
Yeah, yeah. That's actually worse. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let me go to Jonathan in Glendora. Jonathan.
Hey, George. So I look at it a little differently. So I want to know who she's dating before me. Because if she's dating the same guy, a different guy before me and after me, then I just broke the mold. And, you know, that makes me look good.
I like that.
So I kind of want to know who she was with before me. But, yeah, as Tom Brady goes, he's got to let it go.
Let it go, Tommy boy. Thank you, Jonathan. Appreciate it. You and Cameron, stay healthy, stay safe. Dre's in San Diego. What up, Dre? Dre. Hello, Dre.
Hello.
Yes, sir. Are you there?
Sir, going. You and Momo, good job.
Thank you.
Hey, so if my ex goes to someone who's a woman, then all I got to say is she's trying to get away from my type so bad because she's going to be disappointed that she's not with me.
Wait a second. Come on. Get out of here with that.
Man, you got to be confident.
That is some confident bleep right there. I don't think there's any question about that.
They're an extra reason. So if you're holding on and trying to see what kind of types they're dating.
All right, Dre, you're cutting up there.
I like the call, though, about you want to know who they dated before you.
That is a good one.
That's so true. Like, I want to know, like, I remember when Nevin and I first got together, like, he had just gotten out of a pretty long-term serious relationship. And I was like, tell me about her. I want to know. He's like, no, you don't. And I was like, no, I do, actually. Like, how did that go?
You're doing reconnaissance there.
Yeah, yeah. What exactly is it that you liked about her, and why did it end? I need to know these things. Yeah.
Laura had a funny line about Dre. Go ahead, Laura. Tell the people what you just told me.
I loved Dre's confidence, but man, you need a better phone company. You are breaking up like crazy.
Yeah, man. We're trying to get to you. We're trying to have some fun with you. 877-710-ESPN, 877-710-3776. John in Oxnard. John, what do you got?
How you doing? I did the 180. I did the complete change.
Oh, you changed. You changed to a different person.
I did the whole Eddie Murphy thing. I went butt naked on a zebra.
What?
It's from Eddie Murphy Raw. It's from Eddie Murphy Raw.
Okay.
Yes.
I did the complete opposite. It's hard to keep those model types happy.
I got you, John. Thank you for the call. So I'm going to explain what he meant by that. So if you've never seen Eddie Murphy Raw, his stand-up from 1987, he said that he was having challenges dating when he became famous, right? And he said that it was also part of the movement of women's empowerment, right? Mm-hmm. He's like, you can't get away from it. Women, man, they are different in the 80s, is what he says. And he's like, go listen to the radio. Janet Jackson, what have you done for me lately? And he's like, the song even starts, I know he used to do bleep for you, but what has he done for you lately? And so it was funny. So he said that if he got married, he would have to go out to, like, the wilderness, basically, and meet a woman who was not even from, like, you know, like someone indigenous almost, right? Like that they weren't someone who lived in a normal version of society, right? Like someone that like, whether you're, you know, the equivalent to, like, what white people would be like Amish, right? Like they don't even know technology, you know? They don't even know what a cell phone is, right? So he said that, so that way they wouldn't even know that he's Eddie Murphy and that he's famous.
Okay.
So he wouldn't lose half if he had to get divorced. And that was his whole joke.
There you go. Okay. Yes. All right. It makes sense now. Hey, I finally figured something out.
What's that?
I know. You know who Julian Edelman is now
in this relationship story? In this bizarre love triangle?
He's like the younger brother who got left behind after the parents' divorce. You know, like, he's got to choose now, like, do you love mommy more or daddy more? Who do you want to live with?
Yeah.
And, like, you still love both of them, but they broke up. Like, that's Julian.
So are you saying that Tom Brady's Mrs. Doubtfire right now? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah. Poor Edelman.
That he's trying to find his way to kind of sneak back in, and he may just he may end up on the Patriots, but he may end up in like who's missing? Dante Scarnecchia, their longtime offensive line coach, has just retired. Then all of a sudden he comes in a Dante Scarnecchia mask and costume.
Yeah.
And he's like, Julian, I never left. He tells the kids, right, that he never left and he's still here.
Yeah.
Oh, God, that's funny. 877-710-ESPN if you want to hop aboard. 877-710-3776. But, yeah, it is interesting. I think that the way you move on says a lot about you as someone in a relationship, for sure.
I want to know how you came up with the name Dante Scarnecchia.
Because I was thinking of someone on the Patriots who wasn't there anymore, and that, like, he needs to replace someone who is no longer there, and he was their offensive line coach for 20 years, and he just left.
That is a name that I have never heard.
Really?
Yes. Lomomo, have you heard Dante Scarnecchia?
Never. Yeah, no, that was like...
Thank you.
That was quite the pull, George.
Yeah, hey, listen.
That was like, where did you get that?
I am a idiot savant, right, when it comes to sports. There are things that just stick out in my mind. That's a heck of a name, by the way, too.
Yeah.
Like, there are just some names. Look, like, when I think of Kansas City Royals baseball...
Yeah.
I know immediately most people go to George Brett, which, makes total sense. I go to Steve Balboni. Why?
Because
he's a big, fat first baseman. You know what I'm saying? Like, you didn't see it. In the 80s, you saw that. You know what I'm saying? Like, there were just, like, different guys. Like, he had a big mustache. Like, it was just fun to see him play and try to move around first base. Like, so I don't know. They're just random people that pop into my head on certain teams.
Yeah. All right. I was wondering if you were just, like, a secret – Patriots, Boston sports bro who, like,
no.
actually is more of a Patriots fan.
No, 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 no. I respect them because they whooped my yeah. team's ass for the, all those years, so true. I do respect them for that. All right, speaking of respect, always respect for you, Momo. Thank you for always making time
Thanks,
for us
George.
On Wednesday.
Yeah, you I turned have a- Mason down this week. I was like, sorry, I got George on Wednesday.
There you
and
go.
The Sedano Show on Wednesday.
Mason will be on with me tomorrow to talk about the hot dog eating contest. Thanks to Greg and Laura and the callers and those who tuned in. And Windhorse, we love you. We'll talk to you tomorrow at 10. See ya.